The 1996 Sandstone Symposium presents Session 114, Eldridge Cleaver's Strange Odyssey, from Black Panther to Conservative Mormon and Beyond. Newell G. Bringhurst, Ron Coleman.
On the 11th of December, 1983, Eldridge Cleaver, former felon, noted author, ex-Black Panther, and one-time international fugitive, was baptized a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. This took place in Oakland, California. Following his baptism, the new convert's bishop, Dean Criddle, acknowledged Cleaver's high profile and name recognition, but then affirmed that members of his ward would accept Cleaver just as they would any other convert baptism. The former Black Panther, however, was not just another Mormon convert. Cleaver was clearly the most noteworthy Mormon convert of Black African heritage up to that time. Cleaver's decision to become a Latter-day Saint might seem a strange odyssey given his background, beliefs, and related behavior. He was born on the 31st of August, 1935, in Wabaseka, Arkansas, a small Black community near Little Rock. When Eldridge was just 9 years old, his family migrated to California, settling in a predominantly Black section of East Los Angeles. By the time Cleaver became a teenager, he commenced his long career of crime and violent behavior. At age 14, he was arrested for stealing bicycles and sent to reform school. Released after 3 years, Cleaver immediately got into trouble and was arrested, this time for selling marijuana. He was sent to another reformatory where he remained until 1954. Just after his release, the troubled youth was again arrested for marijuana possession. This time, Cleaver was tried and sentenced as an adult and sent to Soledad State Prison. Following his parole in 1957, Cleaver resumed his pattern of criminal behavior, selling marijuana and becoming what he termed a weekend rapist, initially victimizing Black females and then turning to white women. He justified his violent attacks on the latter as insurrectionary acts, that is, getting revenge for similar acts committed by white men against Black women. Within a year, he was apprehended, tried, and sentenced to a term of 10 to 15 years, this time being sent to San Quentin Prison. During the latter stages of his incarceration, Cleaver wrote his best-known work, Soul on Ice. A bestseller following publication in 1968, Soul on Ice was a powerfully written polemic focusing on the problem of race prejudice in American society. Following his release from prison, Cleaver settled in San Francisco. In 1967, he joined the Black Panther Party. He quickly rose within the party and was appointed Minister of Information and editor of the Black Panther newspaper. Meanwhile, Cleaver met and married Kathleen Neal, also a Black Panther activist. In 1968, Cleaver carried his call for revolutionary change into the political arena as the presidential nominee of the newly formed Peace and Freedom Party, a coalition of radical Blacks and militant anti-Vietnam War protesters. In April 1968, Cleaver, along with other Black Panthers, was involved in a shootout with Oakland police. Accused of violating his parole, Cleaver was ordered back to prison. But before law enforcement authorities could act, Cleaver fled the country and was later joined by his wife. The Cleaver spent the next 8 years abroad, first in Cuba, then Algeria, and finally France. While living abroad, the Cleavers had two children, a son, Maceo, born in Algeria in 1969, and a daughter, Joju, born in 1970 in North Korea. Cleaver underwent profound change during his 8 years abroad. He became completely disillusioned with Marxist communist ideology, and as a result of his brief residence in Fidel Castro's Cuba, coupled with visits to other communist nations. Also, while living abroad, Cleaver experienced a spiritual transformation, abandoning his atheist beliefs and becoming a born-again Christian. In November 1975, Cleaver returned to the United States, surrendering to the American authorities who had taken him into custody. He was committed to the Alameda County Jail, where he remained for 8 months, pending trial on charges resulting from his involvement in the 1968 Black Panther shootout. In August 1976, he was freed on $100,000 bail and ordered to await trial. In the meantime, Cleaver went on the religious lecture circuit, speaking on college campuses on behalf of the Campus Crusade for Christ and in various churches, both white and black. Finally, Cleaver's court case came to trial in late 1977. Cleaver agreed to a plea bargain arrangement whereby he was allowed to stay out of jail on condition that he complete 2,000 hours of community service and report to a parole officer for a period of 5 years. Cleaver performed the bulk of this service in the De Anza Community College Library, meanwhile settling with his wife and other members of his family in nearby Cupertino. Cleaver's initial encounter with Mormonism took place in September 1980. As a result, at De Anza College, with longtime friend and former radical turned Latter-day Saint, Carl Loeber. By early 1981, Cleaver's interest in the Mormon Church caught the attention of various newspapers and periodicals throughout the United States. A January 1981 United Press International News story, originating in Salt Lake City and first printed in the Salt Lake Tribune, proclaimed, quote, ex-radical mulling Mormonism, noting that Cleaver had received lessons in the Mormon religion from missionaries. Cleaver also met with Mormon General Authority Elder Paul Dunn. He undoubtedly had some good stories to exchange. And with W. Cleon Skousen, one-time FBI agent, former Salt Lake City police chief of police and professor of religion at Brigham Young University. At the time, Skousen was the head of the Freeman Institute, a conservative, non-denominational, but predominantly Mormon political education organization. In February 1981, Cleaver traveled from California to Salt Lake City, where he spoke before the Freeman Institute and met with various Latter-day Saints, including Ezra Taft Benson, then president of the Quorum of the Twelve. The following month, Cleaver announced his firm intention to be baptized a Mormon. When asked about the exact date of his baptism, with rumors circulating that he was looking at sometime in July, Cleaver, according to one report, replied, "I don't think that I can wait that long," unquote. But other accounts suggest that Cleaver's baptism would not, and in fact could not, take place until he had completed his 2,000 hours of court-imposed community service. An April 1981 report stated that Cleaver wanted to be completely clean with the law before becoming a Mormon. Meanwhile, Cleaver was enlisted as a speaker for the Freeman Institute, lecturing before audiences throughout Utah, California, and other Western states. Echoing that organization's philosophy, Cleaver preached a strongly conservative message on both foreign and domestic issues. When not traveling and lecturing, he attended Mormon church services on a regular basis, initially in the Cupertino ward, and then in the San Jose 6th ward near where he lived. Also, Cleaver's wife Kathleen, son and daughter, attended Mormon services and were fellowshipped by local Latter-day Saints. Cleaver's actual baptism, however, was delayed by two important interrelated factors. First, there was the problem of his parole. That is, required completion of 2,000 hours of assigned community service. Second, Cleaver was confronted with the departure of his wife, Kathleen, who was awarded a scholarship to attend Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut. Kathleen left in September 1981, taking the couple's two children, leaving Eldridge alone. Cleaver did not accompany his wife to Yale because he was apparently unable to do so, having to maintain his residence in California under the terms of his parole. Eldridge was bothered by his wife's departure.
As a serious investigator of Mormonism, he hoped his wife and children would join him in becoming Latter-day Saints. But Kathleen's interest in Mormonism waned and ultimately ended with her departure to New Haven. When Cleaver was finally baptized in December 1983, Kathleen was conspicuously absent, as were the couple's two children. The fact that Cleaver submitted to baptism, despite unresolved family problems, raises a fundamental question. What compelled Cleaver to become a Latter-day Saint? Or what exactly did he find appealing about Mormonism? Several factors apparently drew him to the faith. Cleaver reportedly liked the serious way the church dealt with scriptures. He was also drawn by the warmth of individual Latter-day Saints, manifested in their caring attitude for others, something that Cleaver and his family had experienced on a personal level. Cleaver also found appealing the church's emphasis on close families. I think this was very important, particularly when you consider that he came from such an unsettled family background himself. Conversely, he was not at all bothered by the one-time Mormon policy of denying blacks the priesthood. When questioned on the now-abandoned practice, Cleaver simply remarked, quote, "Things change. Nothing's perfect. And the Mormons don't bar blacks anymore." Unquote. Cleaver also identified with the life and experiences of Mormonism's founder, Joseph Smith. Like Smith 150 years earlier, Cleaver had been confused by the conflicting claims of various religious denominations vying for his allegiance. Also like Smith, Cleaver indicated that he too had been a religious seeker. Cleaver also expressed great admiration for various teaching and concepts in the Book of Mormon and other writings of Joseph Smith. He was impressed with the power of the Mormon prophet's prose, as well as doctrines. Cleaver was intrigued by the all-important Mormon concept that all humankind was the literal offspring of God. He also found attractive the Mormon plan of salvation, in particular, the idea of a premortal existence, the concept of 3 degrees of glory in the hereafter, as well as eternal progression. Cleaver also identified with the political activism of Joseph Smith, particularly the Mormon prophet's abortive 1844 presidential campaign and his views on the government and policies of the United States. It's interesting that both men, in a sense, had sort of this experience of running for the presidency of the United States on independent third-party tickets, and in a sense, both campaigns had been aborted. Indeed, Cleaver himself was politically active during the period immediately following his baptism. He continued to speak to various groups throughout the United States. In 1984, Cleaver himself sought political office, specifically a seat on the Berkeley City Council. But he was unsuccessful in his quest, finishing dead last in a field of 14 candidates. His conservative message, his strongly conservative message, didn't have much resonance in the radical bastions of Berkeley, as you might imagine. Undaunted by this failure, Cleaver, 2 years later, sought the Republican nomination for a seat in the United States Senate. But again, he fell far short with the electorate, finishing far back in 10th place, with 22,436 votes, or a mere 1% of the total 2.3 million votes cast in the Republican Senate primary. Cleaver's 1986 quest for a United States Senate seat represents his last attempt at elective office. By October 1987, he faced more serious problems in that he was arrested in Oakland under suspicion of cocaine possession. In May 1988, under an apparent plea bargain arrangement, Cleaver entered a drug diversion program. But in the meantime, he was arrested again, this time for burglarizing a house under renovation. At his June 1988 trial, Cleaver was given a suspended 180-day jail term, placed on 3 years probation, ordered to make restitution, and do 200 hours of volunteer work. Cleaver's problems with drugs and the law, however, continued. In June 1992, he was arrested yet again on drug charges, apprehended outside a suspected crack house in Oakland. This time, the charges were dropped, apparently due to insufficient evidence. 2 years later, in March 1994, Cleaver faced an even more serious situation when he was attacked and critically injured in a robbery attempt in a tough Oakland neighborhood where drug deals often went down. He underwent 5 hours of emergency surgery for massive head injuries and slowly recovered. Cleaver experienced other problems during this period. In 1985, his wife Kathleen, from whom he'd been separated since 1981, asked for and was granted a divorce. In the face of his varied difficulties, Cleaver's involvement with the Mormon Church was sporadic and ultimately waned, even though he remains to this date on the church membership rolls. Cleaver was actually ordained to the Mormon priesthood shortly after becoming a member in December 1983, ascending to the Aaronic priesthood office of priest. Cleaver participated episodically in the activities of the Oakland First Ward, where he resided immediately following his baptism. Cleaver's pattern of sporadic involvement continued as a member of the Berkeley Ward, where he had moved in by late 1984. He kept pretty much to himself, recalls that ward's bishop, Robert Gamblin. Gamblin, in fact, was the closest of all ward members to Cleaver, with the Mormon bishop acting as a message taker or intermediary for various individuals attempting to contact that ward's most celebrated parishioner. Gamblin was one of the first people whom Cleaver called after being arrested on drug charges in 1987. By contrast, Cleaver had no interaction with Gamblin's successor, Stephen Ferguson, who became Berkeley Ward Bishop beginning in early 1993. By this time, Cleaver was not involved at all in the activities of the Berkeley Ward. Cleaver's minimal involvement with his Berkeley home ward notwithstanding, he did maintain a degree of contact with the Mormon Church in other ways. Cleaver attended certain special functions under the sponsorship of local Latter-day Saints, meetings of the Oakland Ninth Branch, a Mormon congregation with a preponderance of black members, which provided a setting in which the former black militant apparently felt more at home. Cleaver, moreover, maintained contact with his good friend, Carl Lober, who had brought him into the church. In general, Cleaver's involvement and relationship to Mormonism was ambivalent, and I would add remains ambivalent right down to the present. In conclusion, one might ask, why discuss Eldridge Cleaver relative to his interaction with the Mormon Church, particularly given his ambivalence and limited involvement? I guess that's a $64 question. Indeed, Jessie L. Embry, in her in-depth seminal study, Black Saints in a White Church, Contemporary African American Mormons, makes no mention whatsoever of Eldridge Cleaver in her book. I found this rather curious. But in fact, the story of Cleaver's association with the church is noteworthy for several reasons. First, the simple fact of Cleaver's prominence and notoriety prior to his contact with the church makes the one-time Black militant's Mormon odyssey a compelling tale in and of itself. But Cleaver's Mormon odyssey is noteworthy for a second significant reason. That being the fact of his race and ethnicity. That is, an extremely prominent and articulate African American who willing to join a church which less than a decade earlier had officially denied all blacks priesthood ordination. In the words of Mario S. DePillis, Cleaver's prominence made him the improbable golden contact for Mormon missionaries. Great hope accompanied Cleaver's conversion, particularly amongst rank and file Latter-day Saints. Specifically, the expectation that significant numbers of African Americans would be inspired to follow in his footsteps. This obviously did not occur, with the number of African Americans who have embraced Mormonism remaining remarkably low. Finally, Eldridge Cleaver's Mormon Odyssey provides an intriguing case study of the larger conversion process. This involves the initial appeal of the faith for investigators such as Cleaver, along with their subsequent behavior once within the church. The story of Cleaver's lapse into inactivity, while obviously less positive, can perhaps provide illuminating insights into those factors that cause converts like Cleaver to become inactive. The fact that some 50% of all Latter-day Saints officially listed on church membership rows are inactive makes the situation of Eldridge Cleaver all too typical. All of these varied factors make the story of Eldridge Cleaver's strange Mormon odyssey both compelling and fascinating. Thank you. I'm going to...